This is WPVM LP Asheville. You are tuned in to Listen to Women, and I'm your host this evening, Elisa Boots. And I'm in the studio here with Lady Passion and Duvet, the authors of the Goodly Spellbook, Old Spells for Modern Problems. We really are very excited to have them here today. And what I wanted to do is have us talk a little bit about not only the book that they've written, but the background behind it and their practice as Wiccans. So I'm going to basically turn it over to you two now. I'd like maybe Lady Passion, High Priestess, if you could go first and sure. Tell us a little bit about how you, maybe your introduction as to yourself, how you got called to Wicca, and we'll then talk about the formation of Old and Wild of the Coven, and we'll talk to Duvet too. So, Lady Passion, why don't you begin?
Well, I was born to it, I guess you could say, by accident in a way. I was born psychic in a raging way. I mean, not just a little psychic, really badly psychic. And I was adopted at three, and, you know, they didn't take to it very well at all. They were fundamentalist Baptists in Texas. It was a rural place. It was awful. And so they didn't know what to do with a psychic child. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, they kind of thought it was demonic, to be honest. And so I kept my mouth shut about it for a long, long time. But when I was 13, I decided enough of this, mm-hmm. you know. I can't hide it. I don't want to hide it anymore. And so I formed a little coven with members of the school, the girl children, basically, of the superintendent and principal and all that, because my mother taught, my adoptive mother taught at the school, had been teaching for decades there. And it just seemed natural. We were always thrown together. And so we did such wonderful work that it freaked them out, really. I mean, you know, they couldn't deny it. So the next thing I knew, I was in the playground, and they were asking me, are you or aren't you a witch? And I'm like, well, okay, yeah, I am. So, you know, I knew that I had to be a witch because that was the only thing that I knew that could account for
but
my
how did you know?
My
now,
abilities,
is,
my magical abilities.
This is an interesting question. How did you know what witch was?
I didn't really, witch. But I had seen just things on TV.
Right.
That's all I knew. And all I had been told was that it was demonic. And I figured, well, then I'm demonic. Whatever. Because, I mean, that's what I am. I'm a witch. I just know it. And then, you know, I just kept on, and I was always public about it all through school. And the first year I was shunned unmercifully. Mm, nobody would talk to me. They left dead rats in my locker, that sort of thing. But then by the next year, everybody was coming to me for help, and they never stopped. And so, you know, it's just always been that way. When I was 22... I went back and I found all my family, and sure enough, yeah, they are from Sicily in origin. The witch blood runs very thick, and so does psychism through all of them. All of my siblings that had been adopted out to other families had practiced or are still practicing magic.
Isn't that amazing?
So,
connection.
Yeah, it was a validation.
Yeah.
It was one that I really am glad that I am lucky enough to have found, for sure.
Right.
But, you know, that was my calling, so to speak.
Well, let's ask Duvet then. How did you become called to Wicca?
Well, I grew up kind of a fish out of water, too, but mm-hmm. it was a very different ocean from fundamentalist Texas. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, mm-hmm. and in fact, in Silicon Valley. So even though I, too, came from some pretty witchy forebears, people who communicated with spirits through pendulums and so forth back in the 1930s, you know, my family were, and my neighbors and friends were all electronic engineers, very rational, very skeptical of anything that couldn't be explained by a mathematical formula.
Right.
Well, that was not me. I studied Latin and Renaissance music, grew up in the Renaissance fair. I was fascinated by old things.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went away to college at Princeton, I studied music theory there, and especially early music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Princeton turned me into a witch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody who's listening in New Jersey, you better get your ears pricked at this
blame
one.
Blame it on the Ivy League.
Blame it on them. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Because they teach you there to look at the patterns beneath things, behind things, mm-hmm. not just memorize the facts. What's the underlying theory behind it? And so with music, early music, Renaissance, medieval, they talked about in the early theory was the magic behind it, how different modes would affect emotions, different ones were appropriate for different deities,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. So I became fascinated with how music interconnected with everything from astrology to geometry to mathematics. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Silicon Valley to live during my 20s, I became a professional astrologer for a while and began experimenting with some spells without knowing what they were or
right.
what magic was or what the heck I was doing. And so I had some pretty wild results.
I'm sure you
talk
did.
About it later. But I'm not sure I wouldn't get in trouble. But anyway, I eventually met Lady Passion at a witches convention here after I had discovered the craft and mm-hmm. become initiated in a coven back out in Berkeley, a very traditional English tradition called Gardnerian, which was in a way kind of the root of a lot of the modern, you know, Renaissance is going on of witchcraft.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, we fell in love. We found that we were both worshippers of the goddess Hecate, mm-hmm. and that was how we hit it off. I moved here to Asheville. We founded Coven Old and Wild.
And how long ago was that?
That was some 13 years ago.
October 31st on Samhain, 1994.
12 years ago.
Wow.
Almost, yeah.
A long time ago.
It's very unusual. I mean, there are covens that stay together for a long time, but it's not...
It's almost unheard of.
Yeah, it's not very common as far as I've known it. But, and for you all to be able to have... you know, practiced with a coven that long is just amazing. So.
It's all in the just a couple of easy rules,
right?
Basically, I mean, no dating in the coven, and mm-hmm. You know, no calling each other out, no infighting, that sort of thing. If you can raise the bar high and insist that people stick by that, then you get a stable coven.
Right.
You know, and if you don't, and you say, hey, it's all good, do as you feel, then you're going to explode in 6 months.
Yeah. Yes, and so. That I've witnessed that on more than one occasion.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot in common between covens and families.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is a group that has to work together, and everybody has a different role to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of leads me into my next question. You all practice a form of witchcraft called Gardnerian witchcraft.
Yes, and also Strega.
Strega, right.
We're
from
a blend.
Your side. You're a blend. And yeah. As it, you know, Americans, we are very ingenuous here. We blend things, you know, we pull from different areas.
Well,
this
in particular, because British Gardnerianism is beautiful, it's old, but it can be very formal,
yeah,
which is great, and there's a lot of
can be very British,
yeah, in a way. I mean, it's very ritualistic, and
yes.
That's great. But the Italian Strega makes it even more vibrant at times because it's more experiential. There's more
sure.
foot stomping and spitting
sure.
and fire leaping and it's dancing and things. And so,
but the Gardnerian gives it a good structure, I think.
They're perfect for each other,
right?
Yeah.
So, talk to me a little bit about Gardnerian and the Strega, you know, tradition you come from, and this because again, this is a show listened to women. It's a you know, done by women for women. But I think it was very important to have both of you on here too, because there is a balance of energies that you need to acknowledge, you know, universally. I mean, there's a feminine and a masculine energy. And it doesn't mean that one rules over the other. It's a balance. So could you talk to me a little bit more about, you know, where that comes from and how it is, I guess, how it is demonstrated or practiced?
One of the beauties of Gardnerianism is that it acknowledges that the high priestess has what we call empery. That means her, you know, she's got the experience and she's so respected that, you know, her final word, more or less, is law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sure, she gets advice from the elders and from people and everything, but when the tough decisions have to be made, then she makes them and it's understood and everybody abides by that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet... the tradition is that, you know, the male lends her that power, and if she abuses it or whatever, then her coven will leave her, you
mm-hmm.
know? I mean,
right.
You can't be corrupt.
There are consequences.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there are a lot of ethics involved with magic anyway. But, so there's that acknowledgement of empery and a special esteem, maybe, but also the core need for the woman to, for the high priestess to have a consort, a high priest, for that balance, just like the sun and the moon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And so we it definitely practice that. And so it's not just a matter of a god and a goddess or mm-hmm. the god and the goddess. But for us, sure, every coven tends to have like a primary deity couple that they especially revere. They sort of, they call most of their circles in their name.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's Hearn and Hecate. Hearn, the god of the hunt,
right,
or the forest god. And Hecate, of course, the goddess of witches from Greek and pantheon and possibly even Egyptian.
Yes.
So that's our primary deity. But within that, we will work with hundreds and thousands even of gods and goddesses, god or goddess, depending on our need and the timing and what they're known to be helpful for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, we're always trying to seek that balance.
One key element, though, too, is that it's they aren't just abstract archetypes to us. It's not just this idea, you know, oh, for every goddess you have to have a god or vice versa, or every male a female. It's a much in our tradition we're taught to actually draw down the gods, you know, almost like in Voodoo or Santeria, you become
right,
possessed by the deities. There's a tradition of that that's handed down to us, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have direct experience of the gods, you get over pretty quickly this idea that they're just, you know, Jungian archetypes that, you know.
Concepts.
Yeah.
They have personalities.
Oh,
yeah.
They do.
Yes, they do.
Different.
Yeah.
Just like people. And, you know, so that's delightful.
What I wanted to ask you is, you were talking about thousands of gods and goddesses. So I think, you know, for those maybe people who are just starting to practice Wicca, not really sure, you know, of what's wrong and what's right,
mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about where you research your gods and goddesses. I mean, you know, have you pulled a god from maybe Eastern, you know, Eastern religions, a pantheon of pagan Eastern religions, and teamed that up with a goddess from a Western tradition? I mean, how do you do that?
Good point. Well, first of all, I mean, you should start with just one or two and then add on from there as you get more comfortable and adept at dealing with the gods. And by dealing with them, I mean by learning how to talk to them and supplicate them, you know, pray to them, get results, and then thank them and give offerings to them. All these things
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, that they appreciate and that helps you cultivate their favor. And so, yeah, you would start small. But the thing is that every country and every timeline has multitudes of gods and goddesses.
That's true.
But no matter what they call them or did call them or what they call them now, there is a set of gods and goddesses for everybody, anybody's pleasure, anybody's comfort level, that will help them with the very specific human problems,
mm-hmm.
like love and money and health and wealth and all this stuff. You know, there's a deity out there for that. Just like there's a spell for that, whatever your problem is, there's a deity for that. And so it depends on what you may have an affinity for. Some people
right.
are very inclined. They just appreciate Egyptology and Egyptianism, Iceanism and all that. But some people are far more inclined to Tibetan Buddhism, which is very magical, or that's pretty Eastern. Or even Native American. There are tons
mm-hmm.
of deities in the
right.
Native American pantheon. So, you know, our main thing when we're considering deities, pantheons, timelines, is whatever you do, be sincere about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't just go for a Native American pantheon because you think it's chic or because it's, you know, especially if you're a white person, you really need to think, you know, because they've already been ripped off quite a bunch.
Right.
So, you know, you really need to
think. Has to be appropriate
it.
To
it
what
to
you're doing.
It needs to be appropriate, you know, and
exactly.
you need to be sincere
yeah.
about, you know, why you want to contact them and all that.
Well, I think this is going to lead into our next subject that I think we're going to cover in after our next break of music here. And the question is then, how does, you know, once you have these gods and goddesses that you're working with, then how does magic come into the equation, so to speak? And how do you use magic? And how do you study that and research that? So after the break, we're going to get back into that. Okay, we're back. And, you know, typical me, here I was blabbering away, and I played the wrong song. That, again, was Prologue from Lorena McKennitt, but I hope you enjoyed it a second time. Anyway, this is Listen to Women, and I'm Elisa Boots, your host for this evening. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to WPVMLP Asheville 103.5, and we're here in the studio with Lady Passion and her partner, Duvet, and we're talking about their great book, The Goodly Spellbook. Actually, when we first started, we were talking about Wicca in general and the gods and goddesses and the masculine and feminine energy. And we really left off here with Duvet wanting to really kind of talk more about the magic, how magic is put into the equation of the worship of these gods and goddesses. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you, Duvet.
Well, the first thing is they come to you in dreams. They people often, as soon as they approach, open themselves up to even sometimes people, like, we've gotten emails from people who've read the book and said, you know, I was a Christian minister, and then the goddess came to me in a dream.
Boy, that must have been quite a dream.
God minister.
Yeah. And they will do that. They will rock your world in a dream you've never had before, and maybe you never will again in your life, but it was enough.
It so changed her life. She ended up getting a divorce.
Wow.
She ended up becoming a witch and now does that sort of thing. So it totally changed her life.
But it can't be just something you experience in your bed, of course. It's, and that's kind of where our book comes in, because the key to magic that most too rarely gets written about is that it's an art. It's an art of not just of something you do in your ritual room, but just something you do in your daily life by finding the connections, which is called the correspondences among things. Mm-hmm. You look for underlying patterns. You look for meaning in things, and you learn how to look for meaning. Like we have one chapter titled Witches Scry Over Spilt Milk.
I loved that chapter.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that even a spilled splash of milk on the floor, if it happens just right when you were thinking about something really important to you, and you see a pattern there that tells you, oh, that's what I was thinking. That is what I should do. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing we're talking about, is seeing those omens and portents. I mean, all throughout our language, there are words for these things.
Right.
You know.
And the gods send you messages all the time.
Yeah.
People dismiss them because they don't see the matrix. They just see what's right in front of them and their busy lives. But they don't even look up in the sky, or they don't look down on the ground. But the goddesses and gods are always sending you messages of warning, protection, all kinds of things, trying to make your life better if you open your eyes and you learn how to hear these things, see these things, and then act on them.
Right.
You'll have a better, more charmed life. You really will. It
right.
won't be such a struggle.
Yes.
And you will realize that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of loneliness and cultural. People feel so isolated culturally. And yet, we're not alone. Even if you live alone and you have no family, you can reach out to the gods, and the gods will be there for you. And you will feel such solace from that. And so no one ever really need feel alone.
So really, magic is not only something that you practice and get adept at, but it's also by honoring the gods and goddesses that you bring magic into your life. Would you say that?
Yeah, it's some people, you know, would like to reduce it to a purely formulaic scientific thing, you know, that it's all just about forces and energies, but it isn't just that. This is a living universe.
Yes.
And it's and no, it's not, you know, dominated by some old guy in a beard up on a high mountain, but that's not the kind of religion we're talking about.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But actually, that word itself, religion, originally means retying, you know, relinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea, is that you're just relinking back to that whole living life force pulsating universe around
right,
you.
Right. That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
And the universe is so far more vast, with multiple dimensions. Finally, quantum physics is just about to catch up with witchcraft, what witches have always known and said. And so they really are, proving on a daily basis, even scientifically, that our tenets are correct,
right.
That our contentions are correct, that that people are capable of doing incredible things that they just don't give themselves credit for. And sometimes that comes from within, just because we have personal power, but also we can always use the boost from the gods.
Absolutely.
Without their favor, nothing that we do will succeed.
Right.
So it's good to acknowledge that.
Well, that's why I liked your book, because you really, many of the witchcraft books that are out there now, obviously if you're a beginner, it's important to read these books. But I think for someone who's a little more advanced, who's been doing this for a while, your book is wonderful because you really talk about these aspects of the kind of the knowledge that you have to, it's in you that you bring out, but be able to, the way you put it in here is very intelligent. It doesn't dumb down what you're doing, because sometimes these things can be complex. And if you've practiced for a while, any Wiccan tradition, you're going to be adept at certain things. And then after a while, you are ready for something that's a little more deeper. But you didn't do this in the dry way that I've read some other tomes of magic. But this is engaging and lively. And on that note, I want to really talk about the book now. And I'm going to start off by reading a great review that Raymond Buckland gave you on your back cover here. And you can talk to us, too, about your contact with him and what he did for you in Britain. He wrote, "The Goodly Spellbook is a well-written, beautifully presented collection of old and new magic, utilizing time-tested spells of all kinds. The authors have accumulated a wonderful and useful assemblage with everything needed for magical success. This is a worthwhile book for every witch, magician, and sorcerer's apprentice." And to have this type of endorsement from Raymond Buckland, who is like witch god.
I know, he is.
It's just amazing.
And the thing is, we've never met.
You've communicated,
we
though.
We have
You've
through
never
email,
met in person.
But we've never met. We've never even spoken on the phone. Now, Raymond is upline from us in our lineage, but I have no doubt he had no idea about that when he was asked to consider the book and what he thought about it by our publisher.
Right.
He was one of the names that we submitted, because our list of the people that are craft authors that we respect is pretty short. We're critical readers. We've read it all, and we are, in fact, that's one of the reasons why we wrote the book the way we did, is because we really get upset with a lot of the schlock,
right?
A lot of the cheesy stuff out there, a lot of the really shallow stuff.
Right.
And so we didn't want to do that. We feel like pagans are some of the most intelligent people on the planet, and they don't deserve that.
Right.
They deserve better. And so we did submit his name, but we had no contact with him. We didn't know if he would even, how he was feeling or anything. And so he did write that glowing review. I wrote him an email just to thank him, and we sort of struck up a kind of friendship there. And so when we were about to go to England, because the English witches love our book, the traditionals,
yes.
They love it.
Well, because it's intelligently written. It's
they,
not schlock.
We were shocked. We were very happy about that. We wanted that, but we didn't write it to please them. We
just
hoped that they wouldn't kill us, and didn't not like it.
They said, "Oh, when we heard it was an American spell book, we thought, oh, not another fluffy
book."
But then we looked at your website and read the book, and it was wonderful.
They were so sweet. So they asked us to come to England, and we just got back. We've only been back a couple of weeks, and we stayed a month in England, and they treated us so well. Well, Raymond, when we were getting ready to go, I asked him, you're English, I assume you've done some book signings there. Do you have any recommendations? And he gave us the two best recommendations in the world.
That's wonderful.
One of them in Atlantis Bookshop in London. It's the oldest occult bookstore in Europe. Just fabulous place.
Right,
Gardner used to hang out there.
It's right at the front door of the British Museum.
Oh, my goodness.
And New Eon in Manchester, which is also first rate. And, when we walked into the London Atlantis bookshop, she says, "Oh, by the way, this is going to be great, but I hope you don't mind. You're going to be whisked away by limo to be interviewed by the BBC after." And we're like, "I think we can make it." So, good idea.
Well, this brings up the question, you put this great book together. I'm going to talk about how the structure of it is, but how long did it take you? This how many pages is this? This is about, 475, I guess.
476, I think.
476 total. And how long did it take to really, because the knowledge in here is vast. How long did it take for you to put this together?
It all started, I think it was about 2001, and I was, for a number of years, people would probably recognize my mundane name, Steve Rasmussen. I wrote for the Mountain Express for a number of years, and at the time I was working there, and suddenly we got a... I was talking to my
editor. Actually, it started
editor.
Our first public salary ritual.
Yeah. I was talking to our editor, my editor, about doing a story on UFOs. And we get this call, and it's the woman who had written the very first story for the Mountain Express on our first public ritual, which we had done downtown and caught lots of controversy
and
coverage.
Sure.
Yeah, back 12 years ago. We're about to do our 12th, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, I think. She said her publisher wanted to do a book that would be a bestseller and a classic on
perennial
bestseller. Yeah. Spell book. And she was looking for the witches that did that ritual.
He asked them, "Do you know any witches?" She's like, "Yeah, I do.
I'm standing right here."
Yeah, you're talking to one.
So it started then, and but
so they called us, which was a good thing.
Yeah,
that way we didn't have to pitch it and float.
Right,
and get
rejected.
That's just,
it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. It really came into being. It was birthed in a. I wouldn't say easy, because birth is never easy, but it was very auspicious.
It was.
It was. Now, this was the book that we'd both been wanting to write for most of our lives, putting it together in our heads. Mm-hmm. You know, boy, if I had a chance to write a book, this is what I'd say. And we did. And we wrote that book, and then a editor chopped it to shreds.
And she chopped it 10 times to shreds.
And each time we rewrote it the way we wanted it, said, no, this is the way it's got to be.
Mm-hmm. Resubmitted and resubmitted for 4 years.
Well, you know, when anybody picks up this book, this is not written like so many things are, and not just witchcraft books, but anything, how-to, is written for the lowest common denominators, like Witchcraft for Dummies or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really, it just offends me.
Right.
And
it
this book
us
is
too.
Is very respectful of your intelligence.
Well, one thing
what I like.
I mean, Passion already had a gift for this, but one thing I had to learn through writing for a... you know, alternative newspaper was that you can talk about complex things in a simple way by connecting them to what people already know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because there are these underlying patterns
right
behind everything, that means there's always a gateway between what you know and what you're trying to learn. And it's just like, for instance, if you know, you know, if you were mentioned earlier, if you're an expert in tarot, say, and you want to branch out to something, well, you've got those four suits there for the four elements. That's fire, air, water, earth. There's, you know, this whole gateway to correspondences to things like, oh, say, weather magic, you know,
right
into a spell where you set up a fire altar to counteract lightning and an air water one to counteract wind.
Yep.
On and on from there. It's all.
Yeah,
it's
you can
really
build
an
astrology to that,
exactly,
and you can build
yeah.
in
yeah,
so many things.
The thing that was so important to me, beyond the great content, which it was crucial. First of all, we were not going to write a book we couldn't stand behind for life.
Right.
I mean, that's important. That's for our personal pride, you know. But beyond that, we wanted to contribute something to the craft instead of just another one. We actually wanted to contribute and make people think, set the bar a little higher. You know, try to encourage people to write a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And dare I say that. And but also the lyrical poetry. It's just missing in so many, many craft books. It's like, you know, cast your circle like this. And, I mean, it's just that heart, that emotion, that magica is missing. And why would you write a book about magic and not have it to be magical from the way it looks to the way it feels? To the words on the page, you can do so much and without making it, like you say, dry and boring and just a rehash of whatever's already been printed 1,000 times.
Yeah. So.
Apply your own principles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's take a real quick break here. We're going to go into the structure of the book, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what you all are up to nowadays and what you all be doing. So we're going to put on a little music here, and let's hope I get it right. All right, we're back. You are listening to Listen to Women. I'm your host, Elisa Boots, and we are WPVM LP Asheville 103.5. I'm in the studio tonight with Lady Passion and Duvet, the authors of The Goodly Spellbook, Old Spells for Modern Problems. And before the break, we were talking about magic and how the book came about. And now I really want to talk about the book itself and the structure of the book, which I found was just, it's not only easy to read, it's entertaining at the same time, but also the way it's structured is, I think, it's very different from any other book that I've read on the craft. So I wanted to just start by reading you something that they wrote here in the preface, and that was just a whole, just what spells are. And they put spells the very last in this book. I mean, most books, I think they always want to write spells, you know, look on page one or something like that. But they make you really go work your paces before you're ready for a spell. Their version of a spell is, to heal, to protect, to attract something for personal gain or the common good, to discern past events, present influences, and future probabilities, to conceal things that should remain secret or safe from harm, and to repel negative onslaught. Because, you know, many people ask me as a witch, like, you know, what kind of spells do you do? And, you know, what are the spells all about? You know, and I think this is a very nice, concise way of summing up what a spell does or what it's used for. And because most people think of, like, you know, love, money, sex, whatever. But this is, I think, very concise. So why don't you talk to us about the structure of your book? You have the scope, that's part one. You have skills, which is part two. And skills is a big section, guys. And the spells, then, is the final section. So talk to me how that came about.
Well, as you know, as a craft reader, almost everybody covers a little bit of craft history. They always focus on the burning times. They rarely go before then, mm-hmm. other than to say, hey, it started in Neolithic times, maybe, and then they speed up to the burning times and then modern day. And I mean, it's just over and over. Some of them might even do a little timeline on a page, but we wanted to go far deeper than that and show the causal connections to things about witches and witchcraft and persecution throughout. And also its influence throughout history.
Yes, I like that part.
Civilizations, yeah. And countries and governments and everything. So,
mm-hmm. And we started out, well, we wanted to start big and then get specific. You know, it's, again, this thing of starting with the patterns, the theories, and then getting into the practice, just the way you would be taught in a class if you were studying, say at Hogwarts Academy or something.
Oh, boy, I wish I could go to Hogwarts.
Well, this is the textbook you'd find.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
But from the scope, you know, we wanted to give people a background that, like you say, you know, introduce them to the how really this is pervasive in our culture.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everything from the language to the history to the concepts, and then get into the way to do spells, the theory behind it, but starting out from the most abstract and going down to the most particular, you know. So we start from thought to word to hand to deed, which is the way we expressed it at one point, because that's how it all starts out. You start out with this abstract thought. Then you express it into words. It's a little more concrete. Then you maybe make or do something that's more concrete yet. And then finally, it's the actual thing.
Yes.
You know, there it is in the physical world. And that's really why spells came at the end, was because that's the actual doing of it. You know, that's the concrete part. And we were very much inspired by our forebears, by Agrippa, the great magician of the Renaissance, for instance, who wrote three books of occult philosophy.
Yes, I liked how you put that in there. I had never actually read that.
It's hard to read.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I will read it, but I didn't realize that was so far back.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I mean,
plus triplicity, we emphasize that a lot throughout the book, because not only balance of duality, say God and goddess, man and woman, that sort of thing. But also triplicity is rampant in magic. I mean, it's just, you know,
triplicity, define that for people.
Well,
here.
Like maiden, mother, crone.
Okay.
You
yep.
know, birth, mother, you know.
Birth, life, death.
Birth, life, right. death. Things, you know, or reincarnation or whatever.
The three realms. Of, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so, and it's also in the chants, you know, yeah. Hip hip hooray and all kinds of, you know, even in witchcraft chants. So, you know, I mean, triplicity is innate in magic. And so we, you know, when we were thinking about how to make this doable and understandable for people to to understand and really work with and use. Going with that triplicity, it was a natural. It really was a natural.
And how interesting is it that Christian religions and even Judaic, the Judeo-Christian religions, have used that triplicity? And how many other religions in the world use triplicity? I think that's, again, it's so fascinating to me.
Well, it's what we tried to explain there was not just the, you know, the dogmas, this is what it means, this is what it means, but this is how you can use it. Like if you're caught in a dilemma, you know, between two conflicting contradictions, like what's the third way out? You know, there's always a middle way.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
So time and again, you know, we tried to connect these things that religions tend to, you know, inscribe as abstract dogmas into show how they connect into real life,
mm-hmm,
you know, because
mm-hmm.
that's what witchcraft is really all about, is applied spirituality.
Yes, it's not just all in your head. And I think you said something in here, and I forgive me because I did not outline it, but I think you said something about, you know, you can't just stand by. You can't be a standby Wiccan.
No, you can't.
But do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have to engage. You have to, because life all around you is happening, and you can't be an observer in life, and you can't be a standby Wiccan. If you're a Wiccan, you are
you
aware.
You can try it, but
you
your
try it.
Spell results will reflect your distance.
Oh yes,
from humanity.
Yes,
and, you know, if you are one of those that is so addicted to the secrecy and the mystery and all that, in a negative way, almost, and, you know, and being, you know, very cowed down, you know, and afraid to come out and be honest and proud of what you believe in and practice, then you're going to find your spell work reflects that, inner lack of confidence, even,
mm-hmm.
That lack of compassion in humanity. Because you're not just, as a witch, hopefully, you're training to not only help yourself and the people around you that are in your immediate family, your friends, but also the world at large.
Yeah.
And people that just come to you, strangers, or things that happen to you throughout the day on the job or whatever, you know, that is there to help humanity at large.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the favorite part of, what was your favorite part of the book for each of you? I mean, what was the favorite part you wrote or worked on? I mean, what stood out for you that this is like my baby, this is great.
My baby was the dance section.
Oh, cool.
I love the dance.
Yeah.
Because in no book, this is previously never published material, no craft book has ever had the Wiccan dance steps in it, and explanations of what are the meanings behind these ancient dances
the
that witches continue to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I wrote it in a really lyrical way, and then I did the little footprints that you
I
can
love
take
the illustrations.
Take
They're
it
great.
Into your, you know, circle and
yep.
practice in private, so you don't have to be like embarrassed.
It's like the Wiccan dance card.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's
great.
Wonderful.
And I love it. You know, and
I
also put in a lot of the lyrical meaning of dance and what it's meant to cultures, like Native American cultures, and why it's so important, how it helps you raise physical energy to empower your spells. It's one of the many means. And so that was one of my babies that I really liked.
Duvet, what was yours?
That's kind of a toss-up. On the one hand, I really loved writing the music section because it's like vindication. At last, I can get this stuff into print, you know, that I've been studying for 20 years about the power of the modes, you know, and how to use it, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think, really, the part I had most enjoyed writing was about the power of vowels and consonants, because I could actually write what I was writing about.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, when I'm talking about F being associated with fire and P with fire, those kinds of sounds, you know, you write sentences that have P and F words in
very
them.
Very onomatopoeic, right?
Yeah. And you know, so it's kind of fun to actually kind of be mirroring exactly what I was writing about and the way I was writing it. And so.
And I think, you know, that's something that if somebody is practicing as a solitary, they might stumble upon it themselves. I mean, obviously you get that full effect of doing a chant that's very, very onomatopoeic with everybody there, and it just kind of builds that energy, and you can sense those words really, you know, come off the tongue and out the mouth with such a power. But the fact that sometimes the only way you learn that is in a group, and sometimes a solitary person would not think of that. I mean, they might try to make their little spells rhyme or something like that, but you know, that is something you pick up from a group and often is not taught to you. It's right. more like something you experience. It's experiential.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And you were able to write that down and do it in a clear way, in a really interesting way. So I think that was a good section, too.
Well, we constantly emphasize that we're not about faith. We're about experience. You know,
yeah.
That's what our faith is based on. It's
yeah.
the fact that it's worked time and again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's, you know, why, you know, the spells that we give are time-tested ones. And we talk about the results we had in doing them. And that's mm-hmm. one thing people have said their favorite part.
Lots of our adventures, yeah.
yeah.
Yes, I like that, too. It's like you put your Book of Shadows in there. And then expanded on, like, how, when, why, well, you know, what was the result?
Well, we couldn't, actually, because we, you know, being in an oath-bound tradition, there was many things that we were not able to write about. But we've had so much vast magical experience, both individually and with the coven, that, you know, pretty much anything you want to think about, there's a story behind, you know, we've been there, done that. And another thing that I also liked about the book is the spell variations.
Yeah.
It's not just one spell.
Right.
For one particular problem, there could be half a dozen, maybe more,
mm-hmm.
Solutions mm-hmm. to that. And so if you don't have this ingredient or you don't want to do a chant or a dance, there's several other things that you can do and certainly something that you'll find appealing.
Yeah.
And much possibility for growth and deepening over
yeah.
the years if you work the, you know, work the principles in the book. So.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another quick break here. Just want to... tell you that when we return on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about what you guys are up to and where you're off to and where you have been. You talked a little bit about that before, but we're gonna get all that info on the other side. So, all right, we're back. You are listening to Listen to Women. This is WPVM LP Asheville 103.5, and I am your host for this evening, Elisa Boots. We have been having a wonderful conversation here with Lady Passion and Duvet, the authors of the Goodly Spell Book, Old Spells for Modern Problems. And right before the break, we were talking about the structure of the book and how that was unique, if you are a Wiccan, to read this book and to really see how different this book is. One quick question on the book itself before we get to kind of what you guys are up to, but talk to me a little bit about your resources section, because I thought that was really interesting. You also have kind of a typical glossary in there, but it has a lot of herbs and it has a lot of other magical, you know, instruments for use. And so tell me how you compiled all that.
Well, a lot of these spells we know we've used, of course, but then we did some research also to, like, say one spell to cure fever, or
mm-hmm.
stop a fever. There might be 1,500 spells for that. They're all based on the same general principle and often use the same sort of words or word parts. But so we just picked and chose some of the more the basic ones, really old ones, easy to do, that gave a lot of options for people to, you know, depending on what they had to work with. But in doing the research, some of the spells require very specific ingredients, really old stuff, like, say, water from a wicker wherry or a sunken shipwreck. You know, well, not just you can't just go out and get that.
Yeah, not easy to do if you live
yeah.
in Iowa.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard. And so, you know, we talked about submerging a wherry, a basket, you know, in some water. That's a way, or get some river water, things like that. But especially for the spells that require a lot of the kind of obscure, it seems, seeds or herbs
mm-hmm.
and all. Well, they didn't specify this particular genus, this particular species. They just said, you know, say red mustard seeds. But the way that the spell was worded, it was clear they meant red and not yellow mustard seeds.
Okay.
So then I would have to research, well, what's the genus name of the red mustard seed? So it, you know, the spells themselves led me to what kind of species they were, often as not. And then, of course, you know, to prevent any kind of accidental overdose or ingestion or anything
right.
like that, because we didn't want to write a disclaimer,
yeah.
you know. I had to be real specific, and I put my RN on the line to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a registered nurse, and so, you know, and also an herbalist, and so I had to be very explicit and clear and precise and give people as much information so that they could go out to a feed store or grow it themselves
right.
or go online and get that resource for that spell that they wanted to do.
So this book, really, it's not just about spells, but it has tremendous resources in it. You all did amazing research. And I think if you just even looked in the back and looked at the resources page, you would be, I mean, right there has, like, probably all the major important books or you know, types of places to go that really are important in the craft. And so it's so nice to see that because, again, with all these other craft books that are out there, they got their typical stuff. And I think this is, you could use this book alone and get so many resources out of it and use out of it, not just for spells, but just for further, you know, information and knowledge on your own. So I really want to commend you on the fabulous job you did here. And tell us now, tell the audience now what you are up to locally, non-locally, and just briefly, just tell us real quick about the trip you just came back from.
Yes, we just got back from England for a month. We were there invited by the witches of Pendle Mountain. Pendle was the site in the 1600s of two very gruesome witch persecutions of several families in the 1600s that had been pretty traditional. It started off as a rivalry between basically two witch camps headed by women, Dimdike and
Chattox.
And before it was all said and done, lots of people lost their lives. Well, Pendle Mountain is still very holy to witches in that area. It's out in the middle of beautiful sheep country, lots and lots of rolling greenery and sheep and beautiful old rock formations and long lines of rock fences and such. Beautiful country. And they wanted us to come and headline their Pendle Witch Camp, which is pretty notorious. And we jumped at the chance. And while we were there teaching them Wiccan dances and barbarous words of power and what else? Magical music.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We also took the opportunity to, like I say, do these signings, book signings and such. So everyone we met was fabulous to us. And we had a blast. They treated us so well. And we just got back from that. And we're working on Samhain.
Yeah, we'll be doing the 12th annual public Samhain ritual, free public witch ritual, on Halloween proper, as we always do it. It's Tuesday, October 31st. And it'll be at Unity Center this time, which is over in Fletcher. And we did it there back 8 years ago at our fourth one. And they're very very kind to let us use their land again to do it. And
how many people usually attend your public ceremonies, your public rituals?
I mean, hundreds upon hundreds.
So it's a large gathering.
Thousands,
yeah,
yeah,
they,
a large
they come from all over the country now,
wow,
too.
Wow.
And we're getting tons of interest from all over the country in this one. And we really urge people to find out more about it on our website, oldenwild.org. That's oldenwilde.org. And to volunteer to contribute their talents to it. Or, you know, we could always use some donations, too, since this is all free for the public. And you know,
but it's not cheap to put on. And
oh,
it's
no,
very elaborate, and no two Samhains are the same. This year's theme is Creatures of the Night.
Mm.
So it'll give people a lot of opportunity to be creative.
Do you have a time that how long these rituals last?
8 p.m. until...
Okay.
Because this year we
okay,
won't have to do it from 8 to 10 and just okay, and then break down. So this year we get to hang around afterwards around the bale fires to have some fire spinning, poi dancing,
wonderful,
all kinds of neat stuff. Lots of surprises.
Yeah, so, yeah. So are there any other trips abroad that you're doing or planning on or any, you know,
well,
maybe else in the country?
We, in the long run, we are, see, the way we see it, this country's in a lot of trouble right now. It's being ruled basically by a fundamentalist theocracy that's pissing off the rest of the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the reasons we went to England was we wanted to kind of try to kind of be diplomats for something a little kinder and more compassionate than that also represents
We're not doing
America.
Well in that diplomatic area.
Yeah. And people were very pleased with that there.
That's great.
So, because witches, I mean, magic is one of the most universal cultural things there are. And everywhere you go, there are witches. They go by different names everywhere.
Yes.
But there are always people helping and healing through spells and herbs and whatever means they can for their communities. And we just want to meet those people and tell us, look, we're not all about bombs here.
Yeah. Know? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so that's.
We're thinking since we did a typically witchy Euro tour. We didn't go to like the Tower of London. We went to haunted restaurants where they had, you know, chopped off a cheater's hand at cards and they've mummified it and it's for centuries old and they display it, you know.
Well, how appetizing.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the way we are. And we slept in the middle of the Avebury Stone Circle. So we went to a lot of off the beaten path places. So now that we know the ropes and know where all the neat witchy places are and have a lot of witchy friends there, we're thinking about eventually doing a tour for local witches who want to go and see it from that angle.
Sign me up.
Yeah,
sign me up.
Great.
Yeah. Now, briefly, and we talked about this during the break, just tell us, do you have a second book in the works, Lady Passion Duvet?
We do, in
fact. Oh, okay.
We are working on it as we speak, mm-hmm. and it's going to be witchy, but completely different. I think everybody's going to love it, and there's so much interest. Not a day goes by. I don't get, 10 emails going, when is it coming out? When is it coming out? So it's not in publication yet, but it won't be too long.
Okay, great. And so I guess the best way to do is just check back at the website constant updates, mm-hmm. and where everybody is, where you are in that journey.
And I'll be uploading some really cool stuff from that England trip
soon. That should be fabulous.
We sailed on the Queen Mary too.
Oh, wow.
World's largest ocean liner. There and back.
Because despite being witches, we hate flying on
airplanes.
You do flying in other ways.
Exactly, yeah.
That's easy, but going up in a tin can, not so good. And so by the time we got, when we were on our transatlantic passage coming back, the crew had figured out who we and what we were, and they started coming every day for hours on end for readings. And
wow.
I did dozens and dozens and dozens every day. And so they were so grateful. They, you know, sent us flowers. I mean, we just had a ton of really neat magical adventures.
I'm so happy to hear that this has been such a wonderful. I mean, this was certainly an endeavor that was monumental, but it paid off in wonderful ways. And, you know, I think that the hard work you've put into it is really being reflected in what you're getting back from everybody who's, you know, who you've been in touch with since then.
People can get it at any bookstore if they're sold out, which a lot are. Have them order it. They can get it at Amazon.com, our website, oldandwild.org.
Okay.
Just about anywhere. It's internationally distributed. So.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you both, Lady Passion and Duvet, for having come over here and chatted with me today. I just want to say to all my listeners out there, it has been, as Jerry Garcia would say, it's been a trip, and I've truly enjoyed my time on the air with you and Listen to Women. I will be moving on to other endeavors, but I will never forget my time here, and I certainly hope you have been entertained as well as informed and possibly even enlightened by some of the things that we've talked about over the last year or so. So I just want to say adios to you all, and we're going to close out the program with some more music here, and of course we're going to go back to Lorena, my favorite, but you know, since it's my last show, I can play whatever I want. So blessed be to you all, and blessed be to you, Lady Passion and Duvet.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.